Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of College Town Talk. I'm Jonathan Frank, and I am once again joined this week by my co-host and co-worker in the Office of Communications and Marketing, Jamie Fancher. Jamie, thanks for hanging around for week two.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
Okay, so just for our listeners, want to give them a chance to get to know you a little bit. You, we're both Tech alums.
Yeah.
You met your husband at Tech. You got your master's at Tech. You're going to be starting your PhD in the fall. And you all met at Tech, right? Like a lot of our guests that meet their spouses at Tech. That was your story.
Yeah, we have the typical love story of Tennessee Tech. He was in a fraternity and I was in a sorority and just kind of kept hanging out. And one day we just never stopped hanging out. So we just joke that we don't really even know when we started dating because we just never stopped hanging out. But it's pretty fun to look back. And now that I work at Tech, and I'm always on campus walking around, I just see little things that remind me of when I was a college student, but it has changed. I graduated in 2019, and just from the short time from then to now, it's changed a lot, but it's really fun to see. And then my husband gets to see it through me and get to learn a little bit more. He always loves the Tennessee Tech, what's happening now. Every time I come home from work, he's like, so what's new? What's going on over there? he never likes to leave either, which is pretty fun. But yeah, now we're growing our family in Cookeville. And we're not going to push him to Tennessee Tech, but we wouldn't be mad about Tennessee Tech. But we want him to make sure that they have their own choice, just like we did. So yeah.
She graduated in 2019 and still gets mistaken for a student every now and then.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
Wish it would happen to me. Well, we're excited to have you back, and we're excited about our guest today, Dr. Joshua Martin, a two-time Tennessee Tech graduate who now serves as Assistant Professor of Spanish in the Department of Foreign Languages. Dr. Martin is the winner of Tech's 2024 to 2025 Scholastic Research Award and is the author of the new book, Masculinity, Coloniality, and the U.S.-Mexico Border in Literature and Political Culture. He's also the faculty advisor for Tech's chapter of the Alpha Mu Gamma Foreign Languages Honor Society. Prior to his service at Tech, he held roles at the University of North Georgia and the University of Kentucky. He was also previously a medical interpreter and tutor for a local education program serving Hispanic youth. Dr. Martin, welcome to College Town Talk.
Hey, it's so good to be here. Thanks for having me. I do want to add, I used to be mistaken for a student as well.
Yes.
That is no longer the case, unfortunately. So enjoy it while you can.
Well, I could be mistaken for a non-traditional student, you know?
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Martin, something we both have in common is that we attended Tech, lived here in the community, we went out of state, and eventually returned. Now, there are a few things we don't have in common, namely that you graduated summa cum laude and wrote a book and earned a PhD, but we'll set all that aside. Why did you decide that Tennessee Tech was the right place to continue your career, and what has the experience been like for you of returning to serve your alma mater as faculty?
So it's been a really rewarding and gratifying experience, to be quite honest with you, and I'm just really thankful to be part of a campus community that continues to be as impactful for current students as it has been for former students like myself. My transition back to Tech came after my having spent, I think it was 6 years at the University of North Georgia, where I held a similar role to the one I'm in now, in addition to being associate department head of what was then the Department of Spanish and Portuguese. So in 2022, I came across, sort of by accident, a job ad that was essentially a reflection of both my work experience inside and outside of academia. So, for example, the job ad specified that the Department of Foreign Languages here at Tech was seeking someone who had a history of student mentorship and advising, who was qualified to teach all levels of Spanish, including Spanish for healthcare professionals, Spanish for the professions, and then upper division courses about Latin America. So I checked all those boxes and decided to apply just to see what would happen. I absolutely love North Georgia, but there's something uniquely special about Tennessee Tech. For me, as an undergraduate, it was about really community and opportunity. And that much hasn't changed. When I came for my campus visit during the interview process, it became evident to me that Tech was this, really forward-thinking institution. The faculty were supportive. The students were eager to make big changes and do exciting things. So, all of that combined with the fact that I have several friends and family in Middle Tennessee, made Tech the ideal place for me to call home. So eventually they made the job offer and I jumped at the opportunity.
I'm sure that it's changed a lot for you too, like I was talking about earlier, just being a former student and seeing how much Tennessee Tech has grown. It's pretty cool to see how much is changing but still staying the same from back when we were students and knew about it.
Absolutely.
Speaking of changing, the Spanish program at Tennessee Tech has been on a huge enrollment upswing, and the Department of Foreign Language has been reporting that it's anticipating one of its largest freshman classes in many years.
Yeah.
So what do you think is attributing that growth, and what would you want a prospective student thinking about pursuing a Spanish major from Tennessee Tech to know about the department?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So we will be welcoming one of our largest freshman cohorts in recent memory, and we are absolutely thrilled and just super excited to be able to welcome those students to campus. Shortly after I came back to Tech, we in the Department of Foreign Languages sort of took a step back to gauge where we wanted to take the department in the coming years and how we could, you know, continue helping students to lead and thrive during their time here and of course, after in whatever career they choose to pursue. So to us, the benefits of studying languages are, you know, pretty obvious, but we realized that a lot of folks might be a little unfamiliar with what we actually do and what that looks like on the ground. So in our classes, you learn about history, you learn about culture, literature, philosophical movements, you learn how to write, you learn how to converse, you learn how to do research. You essentially get sort of the greatest hits of the humanities and those critical thinking skills, but you also develop these really valuable and highly sought after language skills that gives students an edge in the job market. So we decided to kind of address that disconnect by embarking on a really intensive and I would add ultimately highly effective recruiting campaign. So we spoke with over 1,000 high school students throughout Tennessee. We totally redesigned our webpage. We gathered student testimonies. We printed new brochures. What else did? We created new classes. We updated our degree plans of study. And because we have so many students who double major with us, we redesigned our curriculum to remove any potential bottlenecks so that students can graduate with both degrees in a timely manner. So that in particular was really important to us. Tech does a lot of good things, and I think one of those is preparing students for life after Tech. I always tell people, you know, to say that you're investing in languages is to say that you take seriously the idea of career readiness. So part of our message is that investing in your language skills is an investment both in yourself and really in your future. And to your second question about what a potential Spanish major should know, I would say that number one, we are invested in you. You will find a community of supportive faculty and supportive peers who want you to succeed. Our classes are generally smaller, so that gives students the opportunity to really get to know us and to work with us, and they also form close bonds with their peers. That sort of allows for more specialized one-on-one attention so that they can learn better and develop those skills that I mentioned earlier. I would say this is true really of all the students we serve, whether they're majors or minors, or maybe they're just taking our classes for fun. And I would also add that we have a really dynamic program. So if you're interested in interpreting or translation or Spanish for business, literature, culture, linguistics, we offer all of those and more. And so we speak to a lot of different interests. And I know I'm talking a lot, so I'll try to hurry. The last thing I would add is that our Spanish degree program is very doable. And by that, I mean we have lots of flexibility baked into the program. So, you know, if you like, you can study abroad. You can even pursue another major beyond Spanish. We have a certificate in French for the workplace that gives students the foundations that are really necessary to succeed in a French-speaking work environment. And we also offer a degree in international commerce and cultures. This used to be called international business and cultures. And this program helps students to navigate, you know, the complexities of global markets, cross-cultural management, things like that. So essentially, we have something for everybody, and I would just say, come join us.
You're definitely sounding like you're making it personal over in the Spanish department. And I think that goes with Tennessee Tech's branding a little of it's personal. So
yeah, absolutely.
He's persuaded me. I'm ready to take a Spanish class. Well, Dr. Martin, we've got to talk about your new book, because I know these things are a labor of love, and you devoted so much time and research to this. The book is called Masculinity, Coloniality, and the U.S.-Mexico Border in Literature and Political Culture, and it's available now wherever books are sold. What made you decide to write this book, and what do you hope readers take away from its message?
Ooh, so I actually had no intention of writing a book at all. I have friends who have gone through that process, and even though they say it's rewarding, and I think it has been too, it is nevertheless sort of like a marathon that never seems to end. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to put myself through that. And I also wasn't sure if I actually had it in me to do it. But I was sort of convinced to do so after an editor reached out to me a few years ago, and they'd essentially read a book chapter that I wrote for a different book in which I talked about masculinity and populism and how the U.S.-Mexico border has sort of transformed into this stage where those conversations and anxieties play out here in the United States. So long story short, I spoke with the acquisitions editor. I familiarized myself with the timeline and the expectations, and I felt really supported and sort of really motivated, since there wasn't anything out there similar to what I was trying to do in this book. So the book itself is really two things. First, it looks at how four novels, each of which is set in the 19th century, shortly after the modern-day border was created, how they reveal how the border becomes a stage where American identity is essentially constructed. So the writers I study are from both sides of the divide, and they identify in different ways how the border has been represented and misrepresented going all the way back to the 19th century. So from there, the book tries to unpack how those misrepresentations pop up in political culture. And I focus on certain events in the 1980s and beyond and try to show how those patterns continue to play out on that quote-unquote border stage. And they're always kind of informing how we think about national identity and our own history. I remember reading once that if history doesn't make you at least a little uncomfortable, then it's probably just propaganda. So in terms of the takeaway, I would say that knowing the history of the border and how it came to be and how it has evolved can be really eye-opening, and it requires a lot of humility, or at least that was what the entire process taught me. No one book can, you know, cover all of that, but I hope that my book helps to clarify, at least in part, how the border came to be such a contentious topic, and also how different writers show us that we don't have to be stuck there. Border communities, you know, they're dynamic places with really rich histories where people of all different backgrounds thrive and have done so for quite some time.
From the beginning to end, how long did it take you to write the book, would you say?
So I pulled a little bit from my dissertation, and I completed that several years ago. But a book is not a dissertation. You have to, like, it just becomes its own unique thing. So I started in 2023, and it was published in February of 2026. So it was several years.
Wow.
Yeah.
An entire dedication.
Yeah.
Well, we know that there's a lot of faculty members here at Tennessee Tech, but there are only typically no more than two winners each year of the university's Scholastic Research Award. This is a prestigious, highly competitive award at Tech that comes with a cash prize of $1,500 and probably the better thing, the bragging rights. You were the 2025 winner of this award along with Dr. Roy Roberts in the Department of Mechanical and Nuclear Engineering. So what did winning this award mean to you? And what can you tell us about the research that earned you this recognition in the first place?
So I was completely flabbergasted when I learned that I had won this award. I remember sitting outside on my back porch. I think it was early to mid-April. I was drinking my coffee early one morning, and then I was essentially spitting out my coffee because I got an email from President Oldham. It landed in my inbox. And so my first thought was, what in the world have I done? You know, like this does not happen. This is not a thing. And then I read the subject line, which was something like congratulations on your award, and was just, you know, like I said, flabbergasted. So, you know, to say that it was a tremendous honor to be recognized for this award is sort of an understatement. I think part of what makes it so special is that number one, it came from my peers here at Tech. And I would say number two, it was decided by people who are not specialists in my field. And so that suggests to me that they found my research compelling and convincing in ways that I guess speak to a broader audience. And it's also the more meaningful because this is a university-wide award. And then the book chapter itself that I submitted for their consideration was published in a different book called American Conspiracism, An Interdisciplinary Exploration. And that book is a deep dive into different conspiracy theories in American history. So from there, it looks at why people believe conspiracy theories, how conspiracy theories come about, what makes them powerful, what makes them so long-lasting, basically things like that. And the book combines scholarship from people who study history, psychology, political science, and other fields. So it has a wide variety of subjects and methodologies too. My chapter looked at how two conspiracy theories about the border sort of create a moral panic, and that moral panic instigates hostilities. Those hostilities, at least in these theories, are thought of as markers of social justice and civic duty. So for that to happen, these conspiracy theories obscure the social and economic forces that compel immigrants and migrants to come north in the first place. So I examine how these theories represent everyday Americans as both undeserving victims and as sort of these savior figures who can rescue, you know, quote unquote, rescue the nation from what they think is impending doom. Those elements together, I think they create sort of a convincing narrative for a lot of folks, so that in the end, those theories give them this, what we would call a cognitive blueprint that's easier to understand than these really complicated things behind the scenes, those messy social forces or those invisible economic forces that really have an effect on all of us. So the conspiracy theories have their own internal logic, and the border is sort of a stage or the centerpiece that ties all of those pieces together.
Jamie, I see why he won that Scholastic Research Award.
Yeah, me too. And I also feel like I found another book that I need to start reading after you talked about it.
Well, Dr. Martin, I was looking at the clock and hoping that we'd have the chance for another quick question, and it looks like we will. So I want to ask you, you recently took a group of students to Los Angeles, and it was an immersive learning opportunity for the students, and sounds like a really fun time for everybody too. Can you tell us a little bit about that trip?
Yeah, absolutely. So the trip to Los Angeles was actually supposed to be a trip to Guatemala. Originally, we had hoped to travel to Guatemala over spring break to give students the chance to learn about Guatemalan culture and history. This is important because a growing number of the Spanish-speaking community here in the Upper Cumberland are from Guatemala, and so we wanted to make sure students had the opportunity to get some experiential learning, you know, better appreciate and understand the norms, traditions, cuisine, art, music, even the push and pull factors that influence those families' decisions to come to the United States in the first place. So that was a really cool thing that we wanted to make happen. But unfortunately, due to certain travel conditions, the trip had to be canceled. And so in late January, that forced us to really quickly pivot to a study away opportunity We really want to give students those same or at least similar experiences. And so Los Angeles was a natural fit given its vibrant Guatemalan community. So we learned about Guatemalan cuisine, music, traditions. We had a Guatemalan community get together. We spoke with a local nonprofit. We went to a Latin American history museum. It was only over the course of 3 or 4 days, so it was pretty jam-packed, but it was just a really, really rewarding and memorable trip, and I think it was, sort of life-changing for really all of us.
Well, I love hearing that. And I know in the communications and marketing office working on a written story about that trip so that folks can better understand all that the students got to experience there. Okay, it is now time for my favorite part of the interview, which is our rapid fire round. So I'm going to ask you a few questions and you'll just tell me the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay,
perfect. The tech colleague most likely to get you in trouble for talking or laughing during a university faculty meeting.
Okay, so there are a lot of them, but I'm going to go with Dr. Barnard in my own department. She is super fun to be around and is just, just a naturally funny person who's always making me laugh. And I would say that her wit is just incomparable. So,
okay. Yeah. And if you weren't working in higher ed or foreign languages, the job you would be doing for a career?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to go with an investigative journalist or an opinions piece writer for some big shot newspaper.
Ooh, I like
it. Or I would be a park ranger.
Okay. That's very different than the other two.
Okay. Favorite off-campus place in Cookeville?
Oh, gosh. This is tough. It's not technically in Cookeville, but I would say Burgess Falls State Park. Mm-hmm. If it has to be in Cookeville, I'm actually going to go with City Lake. It's beautiful. It's sort of off the grid. Has a super nice walking trail if you're into that. And I actually didn't even know that it existed until fairly recently. So I'm still pretty jazzed about it.
Yeah, I like City Lake. Very underrated, I think. Mm-hmm. Okay, and finally, in your professional opinion as a professor of Spanish, we need a definitive answer. What is the best Mexican restaurant in Cookeville?
Oh, this is such a controversial question. Okay, the real answer, which is probably not the one you want to hear, is that they are all phenomenal, at least everyone that I've gone to, which is a lot. My parents would say El Tap. I have colleagues who swear by El Milagro. We've worked with El Compa Tacos for student events, and their food is phenomenal. But if I absolutely had to pick, I'd have to go with Cinco Amigos. But like I said, they're all very, very good.
I think you picked correctly. Well, I think to wrap up, we usually like to end each interview on this podcast with the same question. What is one way that Tennessee Tech has impacted your life?
This is really hard, so I'm going to try to be quick. I know you said one way. I'm going to go answer in two ways. It gave me the tools I needed basically to be successful. It allowed me to open doors that just would not have been possible beforehand. And I would say that the second thing is it gave me a community of friends and colleagues who've not just supported me, but they've also helped make me, you know, who I am today. So it's just been a life-changing, transformative experience going to Tech and then coming back.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for being our guest today on College Town Talk.
Of course. It's been an honor. Thank you.
And for our listeners, if you're enjoying our show and hearing from Tennessee Tech faculty leaders like Dr. Joshua Martin, would you do us a favor and leave a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get this podcast? It all helps to spread the word about the great things happening right here in Cookeville.
We'll meet you back here again next week for more conversations with the people who make Cookeville Tennessee's college town.